A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to episode 117 of Blue Jays Happy Hour. I'm Nick Ashbourne, joined as always by Andrew Stoughton, and we are coming to you at a special time. The thought here is that we might increase the frequency of these podcasts as monumental events happen for the Blue Jays over the next few days that kind of decide the fate of their season, and we thought those might unfold slowly, but as we were kind of discussing before we went on record here, Stoughton, everything has seemed to happen pretty much all at once.
Yeah, it's kind of remarkable. They had another one of those weekends where, like, all of the results basically went their way. Not obviously, you know, maybe we'll get into that, the one on Saturday. But, yeah, you have to feel pretty good if you're the Blue Jays, at least relative to how you have to feel if you're the Mariners or the Astros or even the Rangers.
Yeah, in particular, the Mariners, who, as we record, are trailing Astros, although that can clearly change. I mean, that was, you know, it looked like a pretty scary team for some time. And, you know, the Rangers stumbled, the Mariners stumbled, you know, even the Astros have stumbled a little bit here. And we knew that all along. Like, we knew that these teams were not perfect. We knew that there was a reason they were in a dogfight with a Blue Jays team that we've generally been disappointed with all year. Like, if these teams were way better than the Blue Jays, chances are they would have records that were way better than the Blue Jays. So this type of outcome was always on the table, but the way everything seemed to be breaking wrong for the Blue Jays with that Ranger series and just that time when Seattle got back in the race, when it looked like they were going to be major sellers, we even had the Teoscar Hernandez reunion talk. There was this moment here where it felt like everything was tilting away from the Blue Jays, and now it has gone in their favor. And to be honest, even one win at Tropicana Field would have been a decent outcome here, because the Rangers and the Mariners were facing each other. And you never really expect to get two wins at the Trop. And I'm not saying that in the sense that the Rays are some unbeatable juggernaut, but this has been the history. The Blue Jays have really struggled when they go to Tropicana Field. The Rays are, you know, they are a team that finds ways to win. As much as that sounds like a cliche, they have depth. They're clever, as we know. And do you think there's some element of demystification here based on the series? Because you might have even, you know, you were pretty close to having a sweep here, and this is looking more and more like the series that we could see in the wild card as well.
It is, yeah. I hope it's a demystification. I mean, I think that some of the Trop fears that people have are a little on the unfounded side. Like, I think they're, you know, they've always had an under 500 record, but I think the last couple of years it's been like by a game. I think they were, you know, 3-4 the last 2 years, something like that. I looked it up, but also, yeah, it's always felt horrible, and that surprised me because it's always felt horrible. I feel like there was a year, I don't know if it was 2015, but one of the better years in the not so distant past, where it felt like that was sort of changing a bit as well, and then it did not. And then it kind of went back to, you know, basically since the Rays have been good, the Blue Jays have had a real tough time, like you say, getting wins and figuring things out at the Trop. And, you know, that playoff series in 2020 still lasts long in the memory, I think. But yeah, it's so weird, you know, to even be thinking it that way and thinking about it, especially, you know, following the through line of this entire season and where it got after the Rangers series. After all our level-headedness, we just sort of broke a little bit, as we were talking about last week, and now here we are, where it's not crazy to be like, okay, this kind of has been looking like the Blue Jays team that we thought they could be all along, with, you know, if Springer and Vlad are hitting like they're supposed to, and everything else sort of holds as it is, you know, you got, you're like, okay, this is a threat to win the World Series kind of team, which feels absurd given how, you know, much we've talked about them not being bad and not being anything except a disappointment and, you know, people's jobs on the line and all that. It's a weird little moment. And perhaps we'll be fleeting. Perhaps we'll ultimately prove that. But things are quite nice. It's strange. People are getting excited. I'm interested to see what the crowds are going to be like, because, you know, there were some disappointing crowds there. I'm not an attendance shamer, but there were some weird crowds, you know, in the Rangers series and basically all the September homestands after the kids have gone back to school, all the home games there. So, you know, I guess we'll see whether that's just like whatever weird corner of the internet that I know I live in is actually sort of getting excited about this team. Or if it's like pervaded the public at large, but I hope it's the latter. I mean, this can be a very fun team, as we saw this weekend, and as we saw, you know, basically the last month or two, except when they were playing the Rangers in that series.
Yeah, I mean, you need quite a few good outcomes for, you know, the Blue Jays fans to have a chance to watch this team in the playoffs, right? Like, not only do you need to make the playoffs, which, you know, you can look at your favorite playoff odds and they'll tell you that's extremely likely, but it has not been totally sewn up at this point. The Blue Jays are familiar with losing out and falling out of the playoffs, although that was, you know, we're talking decades and decades ago, but it is something that's happened to this team in the past. I'm not willing that into existence, but it's just like, in order for them to have that moment where they're in front of their home fans in the playoffs, that's going to take some doing. But I at that point, you have to imagine that the excitement would be there, because at that point, it means they will have, you know, they will have gone to Tampa Bay, or they would have gone to Minnesota, and they would have won a playoff series, which is something they haven't done since, you know, the Bautista Donaldson years, like in this version of the Blue Jays. And I remember last year we talked a lot about the idea that the 2022 Blue Jays would be worse than the 2021 Blue Jays, but potentially more successful. And that's kind of what played out, right? Like, we all know the 2021 Blue Jays were awesome. And at the end of the day, you know, Red Sox bullpen, Marcus Semien throw in that Detroit game, whatever weird thing you want to chalk it up to when you fall one game short, that's what happened. And we could have that happen, you know, yet again. Like, I think the 2023 mm-hmm. Blue Jays are worse than the 2022 Blue Jays, but there's still the opportunity for them to be more successful. And that is part of what makes MLB playoffs frustrating, I think, in a sense, for some fans, especially fans of teams like, I don't know, the LA Dodgers. I'm not saying I feel sorry for Dodgers fans, but the reality is you're cheering for a team and it's like consistently the best team in baseball and they keep finding a way to not win the World Series. But the flip side of that is some team like the Blue Jays, which has, you know, arguably, you know, been in decline for multiple years in a row, and potentially scraping into the playoffs on the weakness of those around it in the race could be a threat to do something. And I'm still not predicting that. I still would have a hard time making that leap. Like, I think the argument for the Blue Jays is just the everything, anything can happen argument, right? Like, I don't think there's sort of a strong intellectual argument where you say this team is better than X, Y, and Z team. Like, this team is better than those teams in the NL. This team is better than, you know, I mean, it's weird, though. You know, the American League, like, they're behind the Rays and the Orioles, and I don't think the Orioles are necessarily as good as their record, and the Rays are kind of banged up right now. Like, that's sort of part of the story about this, you know, to use the word we've used earlier, like, the demystification of the Rays and the idea of going to the trough, is that this is a team that is really stacked injured, and we know the Rays have done that before, but like, when you watch those lineups the Rays trotted out over the weekend, you know, leaning on, you know, Junior Caminero, for instance, who had never played at AAA.
And, 19 years old, yeah.
Yeah, and like having, you know, Lowe's or Lau, I always forget Lowe or Lau, depending on the one. I think it's we're talking about Lowe here. Having him have his kneecap, have a serious injury, Brandon Lowe. And, you know, even Luke Rayleigh's a useful guy who has suffered his injury as well. And we know that their starting rotation has sort of been decimated. The bullpen's there, you know, and, you know, Wander Franco is gone for, you know, it's a good thing that he's gone. We don't need to delve into that. But the bullpen is really good. And Mike Petriello wrote something really interesting about how it's really found its stride and having a historic month in September. We didn't really see that in the Blue Jays series, to be fair.
No, we did not, no.
but it, you know, it would be silly to be like, oh, they were a little bit shaky for three games, therefore they're trash. No, like, this is a good unit. But the rotation isn't quite as scary as Rays rotations have been at times. And the lineup isn't, yeah, it's not as proven and it's not as dangerous. So I don't know. I don't think the Blue Jays fans are like, wow, I can't wait to see this team face the Rays. But at the same time, the idea of facing the Rays now in 2023 based on these circumstances is definitely more palatable than it was, you know, in 2020, they were lambs to the slaughter, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
It is silly to be like, oh, it's, you know, of course they were doomed to lose and that's what happened because anything can theoretically happen in such a short series. But realistically, you could have thrown any stats you wanted at people. You would have been told that this team was going to lose. And, you know, and they went out and lost. And, you know, Robbie Ray was quite good or whatever, and they held the lineup in check in that first game. But, you know, they did what was expected. And this time around, and maybe it's, you know, maybe it's a little bit of bias based on what we saw in just one weekend, and we'll see what happens later in the season, the final series of the season. But it definitely doesn't feel that way this time around.
No, I think that's true. I don't agree that there aren't teams that they kind of stack up well against, you know, with the caveat of, you know, if Springer and Vlad are going to hit like they hit this weekend. You know, you get Brandon Belt back, you got a bit of offense. The bullpen's been great all year. The starting pitching's been great all year. I mean, this is a team that looks like it could do something in the playoffs, which, crazy.
You couldn't make the argument that this team is like better Braves or the Dodgers, for instance. Like, it's.
No.
So at a certain point, you are just saying this can happen. And it can.
Well, I mean, that Fangraphs piece from earlier in the month, you know, had them, like, where they put the tiers, or they sort of power ranked the tiers. I forget. I'm trying to look it up right now. But where, you know, the Jays were, you know, in tier two above the Rays, with the Dodgers, based on, you know, whatever metrics Fangraphs was using there, and ahead of the Orioles, which I think was sort of the... that was the point I used it for, at least, to needle Orioles fans, whoever they even are at this point. But yeah, you know, the Orioles, like, their starting rotation is not particularly scary. Their bullpen without Bautista is not particularly scary. Very good team in Texas. Did Texas hit like 8 home runs the other day or something stupid like that? Like, that lineup is really good, but not really afraid of their pitching either. You know, there's going to be some games. And if the Blue Jays are going to hit like they are capable of, and like we always sort of expected them to, I mean, this is getting a little bit too rosy, obviously, but you know, there's something there. And there's a reason, I think, why people thought, and, you know, thought all along, okay, this should be better. This should be getting better. And it is interesting, and yet you're not wrong either that it could absolutely still fall apart for them. They are not in it yet, but yeah, it's just savoring a nice moment. Really, it feels like people are going to be at the ballpark tomorrow on whatever the hell it is, Tuesday, and watching a team that's going to the playoffs smack around the Yankees. Hopefully, that's pretty good.
I will, before we move on, I will concede something in your point on
quote. I'll allow it.
I'm going to say the numbers I'm about to quote, I don't agree with. But Fangraph says their chances of winning the World Series are basically exactly what the Orioles and Rays are. So they've got the Orioles at 6.9. Blue Jays at 6.6, Rays at 6.5. So as far as Fangraphs is concerned, and Fangraphs is not an almighty organization, and their statistics do not predict what's going to happen every year, but as far as their projections are concerned, those teams are interchangeable, which I think is interesting. I mean, that's a little bit, and then that cohort is a little bit behind the Rangers and Astros, and then well behind the Braves and Dodgers, who are kind of the consensus two favorites here.
That's really interesting to me because, like, one of those teams getting a bye past the first series, which is, you know, a very easy stumbling point, as we all learned last year.
Yeah, and I think that says something about the projections' belief in the Blue Jays, right? Because we know the Blue Jays are not getting a bye. Like, the Orioles and Rays, you know, it could be the Rays, it could be the Orioles. It's probably going to be the Orioles based on the math.
Is it a conclusion at this point? I thought maybe the Rays were
No, the Rays are 2.5 back as we record. So in theory, it could happen. It probably won't. Like, it would take the Orioles really stumbling down the stretch here. But anyway, so the thinking of the Blue Jays having a similar odds to those teams in terms of winning it all when they have that extra step to do, that is a vote of confidence. Like I said, I'm not sure I agree with that. But it's out there, and it's based on sound logic and statistics and, probably more thought than I've given the matter, or at least more computational power than I have at my disposal. So there's something to feel good about. I want to ask you this sort of in terms of the idea of facing the Rays. If there were an opportunity, and, no one would ever, admit to this. This is harder to do in baseball than it is in some other sports, where you can have, where you can sort of sit player the right players and massage an outcome, we'll put it that way. In baseball, you could start a lineup in of scrubs and win, because it's just like that kind of game. But if there was a way to increase your chances of facing the Twins as opposed to the Rays on kind of the final game of the season, is that something you, if you were in a position to contemplate that, would you contemplate that?
I would contemplate that. I don't know if I would contemplate that for the right reasons. I would probably contemplate it so we didn't have to talk about it. Like, oh, you should have tanked that one game so you didn't have to go to the Trop. Because that'll be a very annoying conversation if they go there and it goes the way it has, except for this most recent series, every other time it feels like recently. I don't want that to be the conversation. I don't want that to be the takeaway from the off season or from the season going into the winter. That will leave once again another bad taste in everybody's mouths. But it's hard to ask guys to go out there and lose, and it's kind of a weird thing. And also, the Twins are not pushovers. They're winning a bad division, and I think that there's reason why they're not thought of as highly, but that's a tough series too, and you can often trip yourself up when you're trying to pick your opposition like that. So I'm kind of the let the chips fall where they may thing. You're gonna have to beat good teams to get beyond the first round, be into the ALCS, into the World Series anyway. You're gonna have to do it at some point. So I don't know. Bring on the Rays if that's how it all shakes down, is kind of how I would think about it. But I would absolutely contemplate it, because I don't want people to be like, well, you should have just not gone to the Trop, you fucking idiots, obviously.
And if you go to Minnesota, you have to think of the Jordan Luplo revenge game factor.
Absolutely.
And that's a terrifying prospect. I don't know. Like, yeah, I look up and down the Twins roster. I'm not impressed with it, but the starting pitching has been good.
Very good.
And that can be that can be a huge, huge factor in such a short series. You could go to Minnesota and you could just have, their top guys shut you down. And that, that's a realistic outcome. I think there's not enough of a gap to really contemplate doing something underhanded, for lack of a better way of putting it. Like, in a world where the Rays are totally, top to bottom loaded in the way that they might have been at their top strength when they didn't have so many injuries, there might be an argument for, oh, David Schneider's ice cold, but let's try and heat him up by putting him in the cleanup spot. And, oh, well, we want to make sure that Cam Eden gets some game time, because we don't want to throw him into the fire in the playoffs if he hasn't done anything, that type of stuff. But like I said, in baseball, it just doesn't work as well. Like, you can throw shitty players out, and for one day they can do well. Like, a AAA team, if you put a AAA team on the field in the major leagues for 162 games, they wouldn't go 0-162. They would win 30 games or something. So it's just like, it's tough to do. And it might be that the other teams do well enough that they're not really in a position to, I don't know, we're talking about potentially throwing a game at a time when the Blue Jays haven't clinched the playoffs. So they should probably do that first before.
I think that would be a good idea. Yeah. And it's also tougher now that there's the different roster rules, right? You don't have all those September call-ups. Everybody can't get hung over like in 2015, and then you run out Kawasaki and all the rest of the, whoever is at the end of the bench, because you have that many guys at that point. It's just, eventually you're gonna have to put someone with a bit of talent on the field, which could screw up your plans pretty easily.
Before we get away from Tampa, I don't think we have to linger on this, but we probably have to touch on it, which is is the big Saturday decision. And which, again, it's aggressive to be like, this is something that cost them a game, because the game, it was more about, you know, they could have potentially extended a game. Who knows if they would have won or lost that. And then you had the John Schneider leaving in Jordan Romano when Tim Meza was available, and against the lefty bat who had really struggled against left-handed pitching. And, you know, Romano's dealing with the nail thing. He's clearly not right. This became an opportunity for some John Schneider talk. I tweeted about it, then ended up regretting it because a lot of people started debating the concept of hindsight in my mentions.
Yeah, people do.
Which was not what I was getting at. I did a hindsight is 2020 just as a basic qualifier to acknowledge that sometimes it's easy to quibble with things when they go a certain way. And it's easy to quibble with the process. Although, in my opinion, the process was faulty, just because, if anything, like, this isn't even necessarily one of those like analytics, you gotta go by the numbers in the book situation. It's like the guy was not looking right. Like, it's an old school reason, right? Like, Romano just looked wrong at that point, and he'd seen it for a couple of days. And I think what Blue Jays fans are taking issue a little bit with is him kind of coming out after the game and being like, oh, well, that's the guy, that's the closer, you stick with him no matter what. And is that the right attitude?
No, probably not. But also, you know, there's something, there's the you're playing this like confidence game a little bit with these guys. And I don't know, there's only so much a manager can do. And I don't know if it matters, but that's one area where we seem to be like, okay, yeah, you can be the little, you can do some alchemy with their egos and their personalities, and I can let that slide. For me, and this is not something that I noticed at the time, I didn't see a lot about it, but for me, rewatching it today, writing about it, I'm like, oh, Randy Rosarena was wearing a helmet with bat in hand next to Kevin Cash when he was asking for the review of the Caminero play. So Rosarena was going to come into the game if Meza did. So I'm like, oh, well, then it doesn't really fucking matter.
Yeah, I mean, you can walk him. I don't know, whatever. It just like,
well, you can, I mean, and then, but then you're facing right-handers again, I think. But yeah, no, I mean, I think, and in that sense, you know, and had that really been the concern, had Schneider thought that was what was going to happen, it would have been nice if he had just explained that and not gone the other way with it. I think the explanation, is you're absolutely correct, is sort of did not help smooth anything over.
I think you also had an out, right? Like, it wasn't just, oh, you know, Jordan is struggling in, you know, we love Jordan and he's had an incredible season. He's been one of the best closers in the major. Like, you could do all that. And you can, in most circumstances, you could kind of make it clear, like, oh, this is our guy, but everyone has a rough day and we just thought Tim gave us the best chance to get out of the inning. But beyond that, you had the nail thing, right? So you could have been like, you know what, he just physically, he just wasn't quite there today. And, you know, that we're dealing with this issue. And by the time, you know, in the closing games of the season and potentially in the playoffs, we're confident he's going to be fine. But it was just one of those days where he was, you know, he was dealing with something and it made him it difficult for him to be effective. Like, it doesn't have to be some like, he's our guy, we beat our chests and we're confident in him and that's the way baseball is, you just put in your best pitcher no matter what and whatever. I don't know, it's kind of the thing in basketball that just really pissed me off, where like the best player just has to take the last shot no matter what. And I'm like, what if there's like four guys on him and there's an open shot on the other side?
It's a pass to John Paxton. That's how we do it.
It's rare, though. Like, normally the guy who's like the star just goes up for the shot no matter what. And that's what it felt like to me. It was like, okay, well, Romano's just going to stay in no matter what. And I'm like, that's a rigid way to think about it. But I don't know. I think that it'll be interesting to see what happens if the Blue Jays are to make the playoffs, because, you know, John Schneider's first run at this was somewhat fairly, but somewhat unfairly. Like, we know just so much crazy shit happened in the 8-1 game that it's hard to hang on him. But I think the sting of that and the opinion of him hasn't really recovered from that. Maybe it would have if he had had sort of an incredible regular season in 2023. But that is still attached to him in a lot of people's eyes. And, you know, the manager is always under the microscope, arguably to an unfair degree in the playoffs, just because we're so hyper-focused on every pitch and every decision. And with the days off, they're just more levers a manager can pull. Like the relievers are less likely to be gassed. They're more open to going for longer assignments. They're just, there are more things you can do in the playoffs. I just think he's going to be extremely closely watched. And a lot of Blue Jays fans, if things go wrong, a lot of people are out on Schneider to begin with. Like, I think a lot of people just in their eyes, he's done. But he, it's unfortunate because it's not the other way around, right? Like, it's, there's no scenario where a bunch of, he does well in the playoffs and a bunch of Blue Jays fans become, unless he, they win the World Series maybe, but a bunch of Blue Jays fans are like, wow, Schneider's an incredible manager. I love how he went to Jordan Hicks there. he absolutely killed it. But the opportunity for people to say Schneider's a terrible manager, he absolutely blew it again, like he's someone they can't have in the playoffs, it seems very much on the table to me.
Oh, 100%. No, I, you know, you just have to look at Twitter, and not even normal people on Twitter, like just the randos who I could use to create a straw man argument for literally anything. There's enough people saying every possibility of dumb bad things out there that it's easy to straw man. But no, you look at, you watch anything, you see any tweet that talks about Schneider, that one in particular, you know, stuff talking about that decision. David Schneider didn't play for a long time. That was, the manager was wearing that. There have been decisions along the line during this year that, you know, I sure as hell don't remember, but people have been left with a bad taste for. I know we've talked about some before, but it hasn't been, you know, it hasn't risen to the level where it's really that different than any other manager. But, you know, that's not my memory. And I think a lot of people, have not even necessarily consciously from last season's, the 8-1 debacle. I think that stuff is just sort of snowballed, and once you start thinking a guy's dumb, then you kind of view everything through the this guy's dumb lens, and then when you see another thing you think might be dumb, it ends up, you know, just snowballing, and to the point where a lot of people really, you know, you see a lot of unserious manager stuff, you see a lot of, like, AAA manager not ready for the big leagues kind of manager stuff, and you know, everybody's going to disagree with the manager's decisions all the time, and you know, it's always instructive to me how I was a big Gibby guy in the first go around when he was fighting Ted Lilly and stuff, and people hated Gibby when he came back at first in 2013, fell apart, and now he's like Saint Gibby and everybody loves him, and it's like, yeah, you know what the difference was? He had the players to win eventually, and so that made him look good, and that's sort of, you know, how that stuff works. I don't know that it matters, you know, what, and you know, it does, you know, in the moments, and it does, and it could have in that moment. And I'm very glad that we're not talking about it more, even though we are, but they won on Sunday. And so that really muted any need to really get into this stuff. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right that Schneider will be watched very closely. And it's going to get annoying, frankly, but that's the job, I guess, really.
I mean, you make a good point about confirmation bias, right? Like, once you are in the mindset that this person is, you have a negative opinion of them, it's just so easy to take whatever new evidence you see and funnel it in that direction, because it is tough to say, oh, that's an incredible managing move. And then, you know, there are.
But you can't tell people that. You can't be, you know.
There are.
They're just going to do it anyway.
Maybe there's some out there like, oh, really? Like, there occasionally some does creative stuff. But, you know, especially with defensive alignments becoming, you know, unshifted, there's less of that stuff that even goes on. Mm. It's, I don't know. It's tough because I don't have a strong, I don't have a strong opinion about, is Schneider a good manager? Like, if someone says, is Schneider a bad manager, you know, and I could say, okay, based on what? And they could point to, maybe sort of four bad things that are burned into their memory. And if I ask someone, is Schneider a good manager? You tend to get more general things, again, because it's hard to reach for individual moments and managing brilliance. I don't think that there's that much evidence either way. It's just so hard for guys to differentiate themselves. But when you have a player who gets a bad rap out of the gate, you know, when you're watching a broadcast of that player, like the next year, if the player's still on the team, the next year, his, you know, his home runs are going to come up, and his OPS and his RBI. And, like, you know, I think, for example, of Dalton Varsho. Like, a lot of Blue Jays fans are not happy with the Dalton Varsho deal and how he's performed this year offensively. And that's totally valid. He's not performed well offensively. He's fallen below expectations, and that trade doesn't look good right now and all that stuff. But Dalton Varsho can come out in 2024 and sock some dingers and win people back, because then when he shows up on the broadcast, people are like, oh, Varsho's actually having a great year this year. Maybe I was quick to judge him. But there's nothing that's going to show up on the broadcast about John Schneider where you're like, you know what? I was wrong about that guy. He really knows how to manage. Like, what's going to pop up on the Chiron? Like, oh, 84% successful challenge rate? Like, there's not a way to claw back that favor other than winning at, like, the highest level. Winning a World Series would cure all ills. But I don't know, like, how far could the Blue Jays go in the playoffs where people change their opinion about John Schneider? Like, even if they win the wild card series and do well in the ALDS, like, that's probably enough. Is a trip to the ALCS enough? It doesn't matter. Like, let's be clear, it doesn't matter. let's be just 100% on this. It doesn't matter what people think of John Schneider. That's not how the decisions are going to be made in terms of sort of his fate with the team, how the fan base views him. But it's just sort of, it seems like one of those big cruise ships, and it's tough to turn around the public opinion on a manager. So I don't envy the position he's in, because it just seems like there's a lot to lose here, and it's hard to envision a situation where, yeah, the public perception of him radically changes in a positive way.
Yeah, it took Gibby about a decade.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not real hopeful about it. And you're right. You know, it doesn't, that's not who's making the decisions. And the guys making those decisions already fired one manager not even that long ago. So I'm not, you know, especially if they get into these playoffs, just get used to John Schneider and be aware that he's going to do things sometimes that you don't like.
Or just, be a fan of the players. You know, that's speaking of players and Schneider, here's a weak transition. Davis Schneider is a player of note in recent weeks. I want to touch on him today because, you know, the deep Schneider slump is incoming, or it has come, and he has not done anything offensively for a while, and even the walks have declined too. It's not like his first time where after the Boston series he didn't get hits for a few games, but he had a bunch of walks, and and I wouldn't say that it looked amazingly convincing, but it looked a little better than now, where he really has not even been getting on base, and he's having tough at-bats, and he's striking out a lot. And in a sense, none of this is really a surprise. Like, we knew that he wasn't this, the all-time greatest.
He wasn't Barry Bonds.
Yeah, he wasn't the greatest hitter we've ever seen. I mean, it's wild that he still has a 173 WRC+, despite not hitting anything for like 10 days and him, only having 135 plate appearances his entire career. Like, it, I'm not sure we even appreciated enough how insanely good he was off the hop here. But where are we with Schneider now? Because he's lost the everyday lineup position, which is fair, because like every win is crucial towards clinching a playoff spot here. He's not trustworthy at the plate at the moment. I don't know if that's the right way to phrase it, but I think that's an accurate way to put it when a guy just is in such a deep funk. Even a guy who had proven more at the big league level than Schneider, I don't think that anyone is giving up on the premise that he can be a solid MLB hitter. But like, what are we doing with Schneider in terms of the rest of the season and then like a playoff roster spot? Like, is there a scenario where it makes more sense to, to carry a Cam Eden and have the insane specialist tool in your toolbox if you don't think you're going to play Schneider?
That's a very interesting question. I doubt we're there. I mean, we're talking about, public reaction to stuff, and we're like, it doesn't matter. I don't think that matters either. There's the old axiom, you'll be sitting in the stand soon if you're managing, like what the fans want. That probably said more elegantly than I just did. But yeah, I think that would be a real tough look to not have David Schneider on a playoff roster. Is Santiago Espinal playing at this point? Like, that's the guy I think a lot of people kind of keyed in on. I think there's still probably room for Schneider. I think Cam Eden would absolutely be a very welcomed addition. If they, you know, they got to do some tricks. You know, you got to use the IL to get guys on there. But the team seems like teams always figure it out because he wasn't on the 40 on September 1st. But
he was in the organization. And if someone if someone is eligible to come back but is still injured, like they can make that work. Is my understanding.
Yeah, they always do. Yeah, yeah. I don't think teams are usually left in the lurch if they want to put a guy like that onto the roster. Yeah, I honestly, I think that you've got to continue to go with Schneider and continue to see what's there. You were burned once by probably sitting him a little bit too much. It's not like you're the 27 Yankees and there aren't spots where you can, you know, give Merrifield a day. I'm not saying every day playing for Schneider. I mean, obviously Kevin Biggio has been really good and that needs to continue. But, you know, just get him in there and continue to see if he can work out of it because, you know, we can see how valuable he could be if he's going at his best. And I don't know if we'll ever see that from him again, but...
probably not, to be honest.
But you'll probably never see that from any player again, really. Not an easy thing to do the way he started his career there. But yeah, I think you have to look at him as a guy who can... you know, be a big part of your offense down the line. Just as you got to look at Biggio as that, and as you got to look at Whit Merrifield, I think too. Even though, you know, we're not the most pro Merrifield podcast, but he's definitely had his runs this year where he's shown how valuable he can be when the bat's going. You know, he does a lot of other little things well. Can be a really useful player. So it's just a hot hand matchup thing, I think, from here on out, which is sort of how we began the year and how, you know, different personnel, I guess, but. And how I think they got to continue. It's going to be it'll be interesting to see how they play that. But I think there's got to be a spot for
them. Yeah, I think that if they were to be able to clinch early, like I would put him in the lineup every day. You know what I mean? Like I'd force feed him at bats to see if I could get his confidence back. I mean, maybe it's a bad idea because he'll just fall deeper into this funk. But I'd like to give him the opportunity to work his way out of it if they are in a situation where they don't necessarily need to win. So maybe that could be as little as sort of the last two games. Again, I don't want to presume anything and be like, this is firmly going to happen, but that's one way I would handle it. Also, I think something you have to consider is, you know, you think about Cam Eaton off the bench being an extreme specialist. Like even if Schneider is in this deep funk and he's not going to be in your starting lineups for either of a wild card games, he would be like the home run specialist. You know what I mean? Like they don't like in earlier in the season, yeah. Like, I mean, that sounds silly, right? As if you can just bring someone off the bench who will definitely hit a home run. But like there comes sometimes a situation in a game where you're in a desperation spot and you need to just bring in somebody who has a chance to hit the 3-run home run because that's like the only hope you have left in the game. You know, like the Matt Stairs type of figure. And
classic, yeah.
You know, earlier in the season, you could have used Danny Jansen for that, right? Like if Kirk was starting. And now, or, you know, Brandon Belt coming off the bench if a lefty had started and he was on the bench. But nowadays, you know, you got Heinemann, you got Espinal, you got Cam Eaton, you got, you know, Spencer Horwitz. Again, like not really that guy, some level of extra base damage, but you know, still someone who hit 10 home runs at AAA over the vast majority of a season. And
might not be here when Belt gets back anyway.
Might not be here when Belt gets back. One home run at the major league level and it was at Coors Field. Like, I think there's some value in that, just having that guy off the bench who has the and pedigree is a weird word to use with Schneider because he's like the absolute opposite of pedigree. But someone who has that proven thump is, I think, one of those things you want entering a playoff series because it like Cam Eaton would almost certainly have utility at some point. Maybe Schneider in that way, if he's not starting, there doesn't arise a situation where you need him. But, you know, if there comes a time where your whole... you know, your life, the continuation of the season relies on you need a huge extra base hit or home run, I think he's a handy guy to have there, even if that's something he hasn't shown over the last week and a half. He's sure as hell shown it as a major leaguer that he can do that. I think that's just a player you want to have on your bench, even if he's not his best, even if he's not starting.
No, I think you're right. No, that is a very useful position. I mean, we saw Dalton Pompey in 2015, right? Like, there's Officer Pompey. I think having Cam Eaton there is a thing. They do have a decision to make there.
And I mean,
once they get to the playoffs, if they even
there's been a lot of once they get to the playoffs, and you know, if anyone is believing in jinxes and things of that nature, we apologize for that. I don't know. I think this would have been a grim addition to the podcast and a little bit unfair coming off a pretty uplifting series for the team in Tampa Bay to be like, you know what, let's really focus in on that 2.3% chance that they absolutely blow this thing. I don't think that's where people's heads are at. I don't think that's a podcast they want. Personally.
No, I suspect not. It's not the podcast I want. Also, you know, Astros up on the Mariners as we speak.
And Angels up on the Rangers.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm looking at that situation. I'm not sure that's going to last very long.
That could be a Red Sox on the last day of 2021 type of scenario.
Do not, under any circumstances, put your faith in the Angels bullpen.
No, and they're up by one as we record this. So, I wouldn't put any faith in that. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know when people listen to podcasts. Sometimes they wait. It's possible that you, the listener, are hearing this podcast at a moment when the Blue Jays have already secured a playoff berth, in which case, sorry for us couching our language. But I think we've been pretty aggressive, pretty bullish on Toronto making the playoffs, because as much as I have some reservations in believing that this team has a deep postseason run in them, I think it has become quite fair to feel like this team is going to be in a wild card series.
I think that's correct. But I also think, you know, the dumbest possible outcome of this season, I feel, would be a deep run after what everybody experienced throughout this summer, right? So, bring it on.
I think the dumbest possible outcome would be getting swept by the Yankees at home. And
That's a little too on the nose to be Michael King. I don't need to get kinged again.
Yeah, there's probably not enough. Like, if you're writing the story, there's not enough subtlety in that. I think that would be a brutish ending to the 2023 Blue Jays, just to be annihilated by a Yankees team that just got eliminated from the playoffs for the first time in the Aaron Judge era, basically since 2016, which is very cool. I think you know. As much as people like to talk about the Orioles as this rising force in the AL East, which is, you know, I think that's a fair way to put it. People maybe jumped the gun on that a little bit last year and were kind of rewarded with some of the flukiness associated with the 2023 Orioles. But people at the same time should kind of acknowledge that this team, the New York Yankees, that has been atop the AL East or a playoff factor for, you know, more than half a decade now, kind of had taken the role that the Blue Jays had, 2015, 2016. After that, since then, the Yankees have been, you know, probably the dominant team in the AL East, or, you know, them and the Rays, however you want to split that, really doesn't look like a team that's on the brink of being a huge threat. And maybe that's unfair, and maybe they break out the wallet in some crazy way in the offseason. Not that that worked for the Mets. Maybe some of these injured guys find their way back, and, you know, guys like Volpe take a huge step that we don't expect based on what we've seen from them as a young player. But I don't know, when I look at the Yankees in 2023, I don't think, oh, this is a team that is going to bounce back and really be a squad to be feared in 2024. Maybe that's foolish, maybe that's hubris, maybe that's wish casting. But I don't know. I don't know about you, but that's not... I feel like the Yankees are a little bit down here. I know down for the count would be aggressive, but I feel like that we got a real possible trough on our hands.
I tend to agree, and I feel that, based on whatever little slice of Yankees Twitter I see, I feel like a lot of Yankees fans probably agree with that as well.
Yeah, it would have been, I think, nice for Blue Jays fans to see the team eliminate the Yankees from the playoffs. I don't know if that's ever happened in Blue Jays history. Probably not, would be my guess. Not that, like, it's not a rivalry that... I wouldn't even call it a rivalry. It's not really anything, to be honest. But Blue Jays fans hate the Yankees, much like most people. So
and Yankees fans are aware of the Blue Jays' existence.
Recently. Like, in the last... basically, probably 2015 is when Yankees fans became aware of the Blue Jays.
The Steve Sachs era was not full of success. So we might have eliminated them at some point.
Well,
Donnie Baseball and Co.
We will leave it there with you guys. I think sort of the point right now in terms of our odd scheduling is that we don't exactly know when we're going to come to you. Perhaps we'll kind of announce some of that on Twitter and Blue Sky, who are, you know, new social media. We'll probably kind of announce things as they come. The good news is I think we're going to be with you a little bit more frequently as things play out here. The bad news is that if you're a person of ritual and routine, I don't know. I don't think we've been the podcast for you kind of from the beginning, to be honest, but things may get even more difficult to predict from here on out because we're kind of following the tides of the storylines. And the good news is there's going to be more of this. There's going to be a lot to talk about, especially if the Blue Jays don't screw this all up and end up making the playoffs. And we'll be with you relatively frequently, maybe hearkening back to the, you know, the call-in era where there was a little bit more of us. And so hopefully we'll have your patience and you'll just see us popping up in the feeds or on social media and you'll figure out when we'll be with you. But we don't have anything more precise for you than that. So thank you everyone for listening in. We appreciate ratings and reviews and things of that nature that help various algorithms. But you don't have to do it either. You know what? If you're just here to hang out and listen, that's cool too. And we will see you through the end of this bizarre journey that has been the 2023 Toronto Blue Jays season.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.